So I moved to Dallas, Texas for a guy.
We put on our tights, we put on our shorts, and we leave the homestead, all women, walking down the dirt road to go play soccer.
It was awesome. It was lots of neoliberals and Goldwater hippies, as my parents called them.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Henkin.
And this week on the podcast, Fight the Power, three tales of young women challenging the patriarchy.
This first story is from a woman who I only know her as Lauren because she threw her name in as an audience storyteller at a recent Stoop event. Take a listen to her story about following love and working at a temp agency down in Texas.
So I moved to Dallas, Texas for a guy who's not my guy anymore. But because I relocated, there was some shuffling around with my job, and I ended up working for a temp agency, which is code for I get paid $12 an hour and they charge $75 an hour. And so I ended up being placed at this insurance broker's office. He was a general liability and property insurer. It was just a very nondescript office building in this place in Dallas called the Mix Master. It's where 75 and 635 meet up, so there's a whole lot of traffic. Big black building working on, like, I don't know, the 12th floor or something like that. Gray cubicles. But anyway, this guy that I worked for, his name was Jack, and I think that's because he didn't know Jack. And basically, you know, what my job was to do is he would get a retail client and say, okay, we need to do an insurance quote. And I would just punch a bunch of numbers into the system, come up with a quote. He tacked 10% on, and out it would go. But the thing that bothered me the most about Jack was every day his office door was open, my cubicle was next to it, and he would just lounge in his office chair and call up his retail insurers and just shoot the breeze with them, you know. I'll never forget just his drawl as he said, "Lottie, how about those Cowboys?" And it was just every day it was like that. But Jack had this great assistant named Marie, who she was really the brains of the office management. Marie was kind of a stern woman, didn't really smile, but she made sure that, you know, the work got done and done right. And I really liked Marie. So I trained at this place for like 3 months. And during this time, we had a system that made our job so much easier. It was just seamless from start to finish, very automated. But Jack insisted on us using file folders. And it was such a process, lots of printing, you know, manually signing things. And it was just so not efficient at all. And so I talked to my coworker, Melissa, who was a bit timid. And I said, hey, let's go ask Jack if we can use this system instead of the file folders. And Melissa was a lot smarter than me. And she was like, no, I wasn't picking up on the signal. She was. And so I marched right into Jack's office and I said, Jack, what do you think about using this system? I think it would be great. And Jack came and hawed and he was like, no. And I also have to mention Jack. He thought it was very fascinating that my name, Lauren, rhymed with his girlfriend's name, Karin. I very much enjoyed being introduced to Karin. He went, Lauren, Karin, Karin, Lauren. But anyway, that's an aside. But that Friday, I need to wrap up, I know. But that Friday, after I asked him about using that new software, it was like 4:30. Oh, I think you know what's coming. And Marie had to sit me down, and she told me, very professionally, that I had been fired. And my 23-year-old self was quite emotional about this because I thought, oh, I'm such a good student. I work so hard. And, you know, I was collecting my things, and I started crying, and I forgot that the doors were locked, and I left the office, and so I had to knock on the back door to get in, and I was just crying and crying. And a lady named Pam opened the door for me, and she saw me crying, and I told her what happened, and she said, "Don't you shed one tear for this place. When I saw you, I thought you were going to be a doctor." Oh, Pam. And she hugged me. She gave me a real hug. And, you know, as great as her advice was, I'm sorry, Pam, I just continued to cry and hug everybody else in the office goodbye. And as I collected my things at my desk and wrapped up, Marie was standing there, and Jack came back to the office, and he froze. And he looked at Marie, and he said, "What's she doing here?" And I don't know why, in my 23-year-old mind, I thought this was okay. But I looked at him, and I said, "Sir, you hired me. Why didn't you have the courage to fire me?" And I don't remember what he said. I don't remember one bit after that. But the thing that lives rent-free in my mind is Marie, the woman who was the brains of that office. I will never forget the big smile on her face as he got his dressing down. Never forget that. And Pam, of course. And of course, I've come full circle. I now work in insurance. Thank you.
I just love that she had the guts to stand there and say, "You hired me. You should have fired me." I mean, I would have just still been crying.
Oh, well, that's what I love, too, is that she was like, she tried to take the advice of the woman who's like, "You know, you look like you should be a doctor." And then she just continued to hug everyone goodbye and cry. Yeah, that's great.
So this next story is by Char Hollingsworth. And she shared this a while ago. And I always remember this because the visuals of it are really, really wonderful. Take a listen.
It was Christmas 2015. And I woke up the same way I had been waking up the last 6 months, by the sound of roosters outside of my hut. I had been living in rural Swaziland. For those of you that don't know, Swaziland is a small country in southern Africa that is landlocked by South Africa and Mozambique. And it was the first Christmas with my family. I was living with a huge Swazi family of 17 people, and was eager to spend Christmas with them. In anticipation of Christmas, I was asking my family, "What traditions do you practice in Swazi culture? What can I expect?" And I was told repeatedly, "We sleep in, we relax, and we have a big feast." So at 5:30, or 5:30, as we say in the United States, I've been reminded, at 5:30, I wake up to the sound of roosters and think I will be the only one awake. But I exit my hut, and I see all of the women up, who have been up since 4:30, working to make this Christmas a beautiful day, cooking in the three-legged pots outside, my sisters, who are my age, having walked the 10 kilometers round trip with water on their heads for our Christmas dinner. So I help them cook, realizing I'm very far behind, and I jump in and start cooking, eventually getting bored, and decide to start playing soccer, which I like better, with the boys, because soccer is for boys in Swaziland. It is not for girls. But I jump in and start playing soccer. And I notice my sister, 16, between the ages of 16 and 30, watching me. And I say to them, "Buyani bosisi bami, sital shalat ganya ganya, come here, sisters, we'll play together." And they just look at me, not joining. Eventually, my 19-year-old sister, Zianda, she joins in her skirt, because women, as women, we must wear skirts, and she's playing soccer. Eventually, all the sisters join in, and we've outgrown the space in our homestead, which is just a collection of houses. And Zianda, she says, "Let's go to the sports ground," which is about a mile walk away. And again, women, this is a patriarchal society. Women don't play soccer. Women are not seen outside of the homestead engaging in athletics. So we say, of course, let's go. And myself, embarrassingly, I have enough tights and shorts to supply the entire soccer team. So we put on our tights, we put on our shorts, and we leave the homestead, all women, walking down the dirt road to go play soccer, attracting the stares of everybody as it's Christmas Day and we're all out enjoying the day and our family. So we engage in an 8-versus-8 soccer tournament, again, all women, just having a blast, falling, whiffing. None of us, except for me, knew how to play soccer. And it was a blast. And we were oblivious to our surroundings until we look up and we had attracted a crowd of over 50 community members who had never seen girls play soccer in this community, had never seen girls wearing tights in this community. And the Bukopo, which is a community leader, told me later that day that it would be a Christmas that he would never forget because on that day there was development. And that is how myself and these beautiful 16 women, Swazi women, fought the patriarchy on Christmas Day.
Yeah, so the idea that, you know, she's playing 8v8 soccer with all these girls and that they look up and they have this crowd and that instead of really rejecting this idea, it becomes a kind of tradition for this the Swazi community is really great.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with a third Fight the Power story.
Support for WYPR's podcasts comes from Catholic Charities. Celebrating its centennial in 2023, Catholic Charities is the largest private provider of social services in Maryland. Learn more about this movement to change lives at cc-md.org.
This woman is awesome.
I love her, and I want her to be on my side in life always.
Mita Vogel is about to share a tale about a fishing competition that she was in as a 7-year-old. Take a listen.
I grew up in an amazing New England town called Waitsfield. If you're familiar with Vermont, it's mid-state, a little bit north, in the Mad River Valley area near Sugarbush Ski Area, near Mad River Ski Area, which is a better ski area than Sugarbush, but I digress. And so I grew up in like this quintessential New England town. We ran from one end to the other. We rode our bikes everywhere. We knew everybody. It was the 70s. It was awesome. It was lots of neoliberals and Goldwater hippies, as my parents called them. And it was just a great place to grow up. And every year, the Mad River ran right through Waitsfield. And the reason it's called the Mad River is because from south to north. So it was the Mad River. And every year, they had a fishing competition. And this wasn't like, you know, hokey fishing competition. This was like real guys coming in. It was all men, of course. Real guys coming in, like Cabela, L.L. Bean head to toe, shit stuck in their hats, the stupid basket, which I've never understood, on their hips. Waiters, the whole nine yards. And so they paid to do it, and they had, you could, if you were a kid, you could enter. So I'm like, cool, and I'm about 7, I have my little brother and my mom, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do the fishing competition. The reason I wanted to do the fishing competition was because you got $100 if you won, and a kick-ass trophy, and I was much more interested in the trophy than the $100, even though that was like $10 million in the 70s. So we signed me up for this thing. I didn't have a fishing pole, so I had like a bamboo rod, and it didn't have the spinny thing on it, and like a string and a real fishing hook. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And I knew about fishing because I'd watched like Tom and Jerry, and you know, I knew what I was doing. So I knew that I had to get worms. So we dug some worms up, and then I hit like my first existential crisis around death as a 7-year-old, because I realized that the worm had to go on the hook. It didn't like crawl out to the end of the fishing pole and down the string like it did in Tom and Jerry. It had to like go through the worm, and I knew that that meant instant death for the worm, and I couldn't do it, so I made my mom do it, and she did. And so then I'm standing on the side of the Mad River with my fishing pole waiting for Moby Dick, because I am winning this freaking contest, right? And then I'm looking, and like all the L.L. Bean dudes are like out in the water. It's like a Legends of the Fall scene, right? They're doing this shit, and you know, and like hats and waders and everything. I'm like, okay, so I need to be in the river because that's where the fish are. I'm a very bright kid. So I go out in the river. I'm sitting in the river. I got a foot here and a foot on a rock here. I got my pole. The water's sort of coming over and around. My mom's hoping I don't drown. My brother's like, go. And I catch this huge rainbow trout. I know this is a fish story, but this thing was this massive fish, right? And I don't have the spinny thing, so I'm like, pull it in. I grab the thing. Now I'm having my second existential crisis around death at 7 because I realize that in order to win, the fish has to die. That one was easier. I'm like, tough luck. And I, and so, and this man, like all in the Cabela stuff, looks at me. He's like, holy shit. Now, I grew up in a family of cussers, which I consider, so that was no big deal. And my mom's like, yeah. So, and my brother's like circling. So I take my fish, I go over to the stand where the men are, and I'm like, here you go. And the guy looks at me at age 7. Now, Pippi Longstockings is my total hero. So that's like my persona. It's on my arm, everything. But so I go up and I got my thing and he's like, where'd you get that? Whole Foods wasn't invented yet. So I'm like, in the river. He's like, you caught that? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, really? I'm like, the fuck is wrong with this guy? You know, it's 7. And so I'm like, yeah. So I put it up on the table and I have the biggest fish by like an inch. Okay? I mean, this is a big fish. Beautiful, sparkly, pink, all that other stuff, like rainbow trout are. So then, okay, we're good. We're getting to the end of it. And I'm thinking, I won. I have the biggest fish. There's no doubt. I can see the envy in the Cabela men's eyes, you know? And so I got this fish. It's sitting there, and they're announcing the awards, and they hand me this crappy first aid box. It was orange, and a fishing net. And I'm like, trophy, money, no. And I'm standing there, and my brother's like, what the hell? My dad, meanwhile, has come down. My parents owned a huge antique shop in Waitsfield, and I guess word had traveled about the, you know, I was the fish soothsayer or something. And so my dad had come down to see what the hell was going on. I got this big fish. It's dead. I'm like, okay, I'm wet. Let's get the money. And they're like, no. And the guy, I'm like, but I won. And he says, well, no, you're a kid and you're a girl. Rage with me, people. I mean, you know, so I'm channeling Pippi now. My dad's pissed. My mom's pissed. My brother is sort of interested in the first aid kit, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, but I won. I won. I have the biggest fish. That was the only rule. You had to have the biggest fish. And he's like, yeah, but you're a girl and you're a kid. You can't win. And I'm like, no. And I'm thinking, you know, at that righteous indignation of a kid, I'm like, if I just explain it to him again, he'll get it, right? I'm like, no, but I have the biggest fish. This is a fishing contest. If you have the biggest fish, you win. And he's like, no, you're a girl and you're a kid. And now, you know, I'm like this. And so then Mr. Cabela, his second place dude, comes up and he gets this trophy that I just coveted and the $100, which I don't know what I would have done with. And he, you know, they're taking pictures. And I'm like, he didn't win. He didn't win. And they're all looking at me like, would you, you know, my dad, because mom doesn't count now, could you like take your daughter? And he's like, my dad's like, he didn't win. My daughter did. And I'm standing there and I'm like, you didn't win. And the guy is just looking at me. And he's like, it's all right, kid. I'm like, no, it's not. I have a bigger fish than you. And he just looked at me and I realized they weren't going to do anything. So I threw the first aid kit down. I threw the net down. I grabbed my fish, which I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with because I didn't eat fish. And grabbed it like that, you know, threw that down, grabbed my fish. I think I said, F you, as a 7-year-old could. My brother, meanwhile, of course, grabbed the first aid kit and the fishing net. He wasn't going to give that up. And off I went. And to this day, I am still righteously indignant and enraged because for me, fishing was about catching. It wasn't just about fishing. I don't think I've fished since then. So anyways, that's my story.
She is, when she says she's mad, she's not joking. She's still really mad about
this. She should be. She had the biggest fish. I had the biggest fish. I love like the clarity of her position. And
I just love also that her family was like, everyone had her back except for the men, you know, that were intimidated by her mad angler skills.
I also like how we got a little bit introduced to the like subculture of fishing, like the Cabela men, like who have, I guess, really good gear and stuff. Yeah. And she has her stick with the. It's just great. And Pippi Longstocking all the way. It feels. Anyway, hope you enjoyed these stories this week. We enjoyed sharing them with you. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. We will be back soon with more stories from the studio.